Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Busy Thursday show, June 12th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. Yes, I let loose with some of my thoughts on California Democratic Senator Alex Padilla being detained during a briefing by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, a story that dominated the national news. Greenwich Republican State Senate member Ryan Fazio and Maria Weingarten of CT 169 Strong both returned to the show to talk about some of the ongoing criticism and reaction connected to a controversial housing bill in Hartford. We also featured our monthly update with Connecticut blogger and columnist Chris Powell. So get ready. The name Alex Padilla, P-A-D as in dog, I-L-L-A, Senator Alex Padilla. This name, Alex Padilla, will now be put up in the next few hours. He'll be up there with Jesus Christ, Mother Teresa, Harriet Tubman, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm telling you, the deification, the clown car circus act deification of Alex Padilla has already begun. What happened earlier today? This is all you heard it just top of the hour from CBS. Oh my God, Alex Padilla. Oh, sitting member of the U.S. Senate. Yes, apparently he walks into a news briefing that was given by Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary. Again, you know, talking about, I guess, you know, ICE in L.A., what's going to happen this Saturday with security, whatever. And Alex Padilla, and watch the video for yourself, he suddenly starts yelling a question from the back. And as he's yelling, he's moving toward the stage. Now, what happened is exactly what the Democratic Party wants. They're a clown car party right now until they find another Bill Clinton, until they find another Harry Truman, until they find another FDR. Until they find another JFK. It's a clown car. A new set of numbers came out yesterday from Quinnipiac. It's awful. You look at those numbers and say, how bad can this be? So Padilla starts yelling. Nobody knows. He yells he's Alex Padilla. Nobody knows that. In fact, I just saw an expert on CNN say, somebody can say they're whomever, and the officers there don't know it. So they started to turn him around and usher him out. And he turns around again and starts walking toward the stage. And they finally get him out, and oh, they handcuff him. Too bad. Because you know what, Senator, with all due respect, if you act like a jackass and try and bait security into doing something, they'll do it. Look, none of this was serious. This was performance art. This was performance art. This is what the once proud and mighty Democratic Party of this USA is now left with. Because this is what they wanted to set up. And this was coordinated. They knew it was going to happen. And then, oh, yeah, Mr. Honesty, Adam Schiff, the other Senate member from California, get a load of this, as the great Bugs Bunny used to say.
This is how you lose a democracy. Actions like today, but even more importantly than what has just happened is what will happen in the next 24 hours. Will this be roundly condemned?
You can't script comedy like this. You can't. And now, of course, Here comes the new video now. I'm seeing this and seeing it. Geez, their new video. There's only 20 cameras there, you think? So, folks, look, you can still hate Trump all you want. That's not the issue. The Democratic Party, the once proud, like I said, party of JFK and FDR and Harry Truman and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, has turned into a clown car. With one of its members from California, okay, if he had questions, he could have just stood there in the back, raised his hand. Oh, and by the way, do you know that Alex Padilla and Kristi Noem actually talked it over afterwards? It was no big deal. They, you know, she just said, hey, my security, you know, reacted the way they did because, you know, they didn't know who you were, right?
His approach, you know, was something that I don't think was appropriate at all. But the conversation was great, and we're going to continue to communicate. We exchanged phone numbers.
His approach was not appropriate. Yeah, that's why the security did what they did. They don't know from this guy. Oh, I'm Senator. How do we know that?
I wish that he would have reached out and identified himself and let us know who he was and that he wanted to talk.
This is how you lose a democracy.
Stop.
Actions like today, but even more importantly than what has just happened is what will happen in the next 24 hours. Will this be roundly condemned?
I'm telling you, they're taking Alex Padilla now. You watch. This is good. He will be up there. Trust me with this. It'll be Alex Padilla, Pope Leo XIV, Harriet Tubman, Babe Ruth, and who should? Oh, how about Mother Teresa? All right, let's talk some housing here because, oh boy, the nerves seem to be frayed. Ooh, with the Democrat. I'm sorry. You talk about arrogant. The Democratic State Senate leadership in Hartford basically throwing a tantrum. We read you that line from a news release yesterday. Here's the quote again. No matter how loud the anger, lies, and irrational voices get, we must remain steadfast in our mission to build more housing, lower costs, and grow the economy. Quote, unquote, State Senate members Bob Duff of Norwalk and Martin Looney of New Haven. Ooh. The majority there getting a widow angry. Republican State Senate member Ryan Fazio is here. He, of course, would never be so brash. I know that. Ryan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
You shouldn't doubt me. I could be.
Ryan, I don't think, though, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, that simply because people disagree with a piece of legislation, I doubt you nor any of the colleagues on the Republican Senate side would be as, I don't know, this is me saying it, not you, arrogant, pedantic, what words could be used? I was very put off, Ryan, with the tone of that. I don't think that's called for. I don't know. What do you think?
No, calling the people who disagree with you angry, saying they're lying, saying they're irrational. I mean, that is foremost not the type of civil discourse that I think most people in Connecticut want from their so-called leaders. But moreover, it's kind of a sign of weakness that they're lashing out against the people that they disagree with rather than arguing with them on the merits of the bill. Perhaps, you know, the way the clue there is the way that the bill was, you know, put together. It was rather than, you know, from the beginning being an omnibus a housing bill. It was a one-page bill on studying homelessness that morphed into 40-plus sections of sprawling housing and zoning mandates that was only introduced in its final form. I think they were first scheduled to debate it on the House floor the second-to-last Friday of session, and they released it the Thursday night before. So this, you know, was not done in the right way. It's a bad bill. This has the most Democratic no votes. You know, obviously a minority of Democrats voted no, but it was the most no's among Democrats that I've seen for major legislation. And it's no surprise that the leadership is thus resorting to name calling and mudslinging in support of the bill. On the merits, the bill is bad. The bill is bad in any number of ways, and that's why you have towns and cities and community leaders all across the state and across party lines in many cases.
Yeah.
Speaking up and speaking out again.
And Ryan, I've asked on this show the past two or three weeks, like who actually was clamoring for this? Now, we all know that subtle changes are good, maybe tightening up or loosening up certain areas of whatever policy it is in Connecticut, including housing and zoning. But you know, all of this, Ryan, and you and I know this, and I've been trying to tell people about this, there weren't this huge amount of hue and cry from first selectmen and first select persons and mayors and RTMs for this. Am I wrong in saying that a lot of this came from outside groups and interest groups trying to jam this through? Because I don't recall a hue and cry of local leaders screaming from the mountaintops here that this had to be done.
No, and I put it this way. Think about the housing issue, the zoning issue, in terms of specifics. The vast majority of people, if you ask them, should it be state law that a developer could come in and build 50 units or 100 units in a single family zone neighborhood? The vast majority of people would say, no, that's not right. At the same time, if you ask people, do we need to improve affordability of housing in the state? I think the majority of people would say yes. So there's a middle ground there. We can find a way to improve housing affordability in the state without totally upending local zoning and the state basically imposing mandates on our towns and cities to the hilt. And that's where the vast majority of people in our state are. But this bill is more reflective of the first point of view, that developers should have much more free rein on our communities without our local communities having as much say to build dozens of units in areas that up until now were single family zone neighborhoods. I think there is a middle ground here. And that's why I've spoken out encouraging the governor. I spoke to him personally, encouraging the governor to veto this, because I think we could actually do this the right way, where you bring Democrats and Republicans and people from cities and towns and suburbs all together around the table to negotiate something that does work. It respects local control of decision making while also creating a little more housing affordability. And we won't call anyone irrational, dishonest in the process.
I mean, and the guest is Ryan Fazio, Republican State Senate member from Greenwich. I mean, Ryan, in your hometown there in Greenwich, I'm reading these mandates or estimates saying you need X 100 units, 400, 500, 600, 700 units of affordable housing in Greenwich. Number one, where? And number two, let's assume in some pie-in-the-sky revelation that happens, what does that do to the school system there? I mean, are we then going to build a new school? Are we going to add, not just for Greenwich, your town, but anywhere, that, oh, we're going to bring people in. Okay, and where do the kids go to school? Do we build a new school? Do we get now state funding for expanding a school? I mean, did anybody think of this?
Well, it's worse than that. So, for instance, you know, there's the fair share mandate. So it says it takes every town and city in the state and says, makes a calculation that says you need say for Fairfield. It's like, because I know you have a lot of listeners from Fairfield. Mm-hmm. Say it's like you need to build 800 units or something like that of affordable housing. But it's that number is affordable housing that is equivalent to 30% of the state median income.
Yeah.
So in order for that 800 units to be built, you probably need four or five times.
Sure.
But we'll say four times as much market rate above market rate housing to be built. So it's actually like 4,000. It's actually like 4,000 units instead of 800 units that under this mandate, a town like Fairfield would need to be built. Unless, of course, they did it as public housing, in which case it would cost their town, you know, hundreds of millions, tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to do. So hundreds of millions, really, right?
Because
it's probably half a million dollars a unit.
Yeah.
And no one ever asks why it's so expensive housing in this state, because that would actually be a conversation worth having. Yeah. So just think about it. Every town and city is going to be mandated to potentially increase their housing base by 10%, 20%. Again, going back to Fairfield, there's probably 20,000 to 25,000 housing units in Fairfield, and they would be theoretically needing to build an extra 4,000 on top of that.
Yeah.
25, 30% increase in the number of housing units in that town. That's insane. I mean, we need to build more housing in the state, but 20% increase, a mandate on the town, that's totally unworkable with the infrastructure, with the environment, with the schools, with everything. totally unworkable, totally unreasonable.
And finally, Ryan, just to wrap up here, to his credit, now he may have been a little late to the party here, and he pretty much admitted it. At least Governor Lamont said, and he said, you know, these numbers that are put in there, he doesn't like them. He came out and said that. But yet members of the other caucus across the aisle from you, you know, they're yelling at people who may not want this. And their own boss, essentially of their party, Governor Ned Lamont, said, yeah, I don't like these numbers either. I mean, it's comical.
Well, if only listen, Governor Lamont's the leader of his party. He's the leader of the state government. This is a big test for him. He could veto this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple. You can hem and haw about how you don't like it as much as he can veto this. And we can go back to the drawing board. This is a big test for him and his leadership, and whether he's going to, you know, reach across the aisle or whether or not he's going to, you know, go with his party. So I'm encouraging him to veto this. I talked to him about it. I said, we're there to negotiate if you veto this, to try to find common ground on the issue. I'm there. I've worked with people across the aisle on any number of things, and I'm ready to do it again. But we need to start by him vetoing this. That's the first thing. And so we're calling on him. Democrats, Republicans in local leadership have been calling on him to veto this. This would be such an important development and decision point that exists in the state.
Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio of Greenwich. Ryan, thanks. As always, we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, Ryan Fazio there. All right, let's shift gears here. There is a group out there called Desegregate Connecticut. They've been on the scene for 4 or 5 years. You can go to their website. They don't hide. It's Desegregate CT. A group originally started by Sarah Bronin, who in some people's minds could be a future First Lady of Connecticut, Luke Bronin's wife, the former mayor of Hartford, and the former mayor, who I've interviewed a couple times. Nice enough guy. He's been rumored as a gubernatorial candidate. So Desegregate Connecticut writes this. I'm going to give you the quotes on X here. Quote, see what Connecticut 169s are. Elitists looking at a duplex with contempt, but for a first-time homebuyer, a working family, or seniors trying to downsize, this is hope. HB5002 will bring hope to thousands of residents. Don't give in to fear and snobbery. Support a better future for Connecticut. Maria Weingarten's with us from CT169. Maria, good afternoon. Good to have you back. What are your thoughts on that social media post that I just read there?
It's amazing to me. You know, to think that my father escaped communism from Hungary with the shirt on his back, and I grew up in a blue-collar house, but I'm exhibiting snobbery. It's crazy. And if anybody actually read the post, I was talking about the conflicting nature of the no parking mandates with the as of right up to 9 units where you can convert commercial to residential, and the fact that, you know, you're going to have parking issues. That's literally what I said. Mm-hmm. And I posted that story. And so, and then, of course, you know, it's what they do. It's what they always do. They don't want to talk about what's in the bill. They just want to attack the messenger.
Yeah, and Maria, I give you credit, and I give Alexis Harrison credit on this show and on Lisa's show and on Melissa's show. I will say, you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to automatically agree with everything every group says, but I do give you credit because you have pointed out specific things in this bill. Good for your side for doing it, but it's sad that there are these ad hominem attacks that come without any constructive counter debate on any of this, that you point out and say, this is right in the bill, you can read it.
Right, and that's what we do, and that's what we've done right from the beginning. We've been doing this for 5 years now, and so we really go right to the bill language. We tell people what it says, and, you know, I think especially in a year like this, where this entire bill was passed in under a week, so you got the last bit of like extra 13 pages of the bill on Memorial Day afternoon. I just happened to go on the website of CGA because I got nothing better to do on my Memorial Day.
And, you sound like me at night. You sound like me at night reading political stuff. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. And then I go on and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's 13 new pages, but it's not the whole new bill, which was originally like 84 pages with edits where you have, you know, lined, you know, it, actually you can see where they've made the changes. No, they've just given you new lines that you now have to cross-reference to the other 84 pages. And that's how the legislators had to argue the bill, which was raised the next day, the next morning. So they under 12 hours of getting all the language. And so when they were trying to argue certain sections or discuss and ask questions, their section numbers were off because they struck the first two or three sections. So all the section numbers where they were raising an amendment or something could have been off as well. And they didn't have the decency to give them a clean copy.
And finally, Maria, I wonder, is the leadership here, primarily Mr. Looney and Mr. Duff, we talked about this yesterday, I wonder if they're as intransigent and as nasty as they are, and some other people are to your groups, as they are to their own caucus members, Heron Gaston, Kathy Austin, Joan Hartley, Sujata Gadkar Wilcox. I mean, they voted no on it, too, right?
Yes. Yes, they did. Yes, I believe that there was an extreme amount of pressure put on some of those. It was a trust us, right? Again, because nobody really saw the bill. No one really had time to read the bill. And we are hearing little whispers that some of them now regret having the ones who voted yes are regretting it. So it's a little late now, we think that it's the wrong move. You don't get good policy by doing it in the dark, by pushing it, shoving it down everyone's throat when it has so many internal inconsistencies, when it's got errors within the bill. There's straight out errors in the bill.
Wow. Maria, thank you. Maria Weingarten, CT169 Strong. Maria, thanks. Fight the good fight, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Chris Powell is here. Let's segue over to Chris now with his look on all things Connecticut. Check out ChrisPowellColumn.com. Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir. Where has the sanity gone? Can you please?
Well, I don't see much from my house either, Paul. So.
Oh, my God. Chris, before we get to some of your columns, I don't know about you, but you have to love, I mean, rhetorically and from a journalistic point of view, the absolute chaos with this housing bill now and the barbs being really and the finger pointing and the dripping hateful statements coming from some in leadership in Hartford. What are your thoughts on this whole thing? And the governor's saying, Chris, hey, maybe this bill isn't good.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that the governor's waffling on it, but I haven't studied the bill, but yeah. I have heard the Democratic House Majority Leader, Jason Rojas, say a few times now that, you know, what's everybody worried about? Because the bill's not going to make anybody build any housing at all. So yeah. I thought, well, maybe this is the perfect legislation for Connecticut. You strike a grand pose and you do absolutely nothing.
But it looks good, Chris. Doesn't it just look great?
Well, I guess it strikes, you know, the right tone with certain people. But look, I'm really on the housing side. I've been writing on this issue for really decades. You know, we need a lot of housing. We need a lot of inexpensive housing. I understand why people they all want it somewhere else because they're afraid of the impoverished people that may inhabit inexpensive housing now. There's a lot of ordinary people aspiring to the middle class who can't afford housing right now, and that's the problem. But I understand the suspicion of it. People move to the suburbs because social policy made a wreck of the cities, and they don't want the problems, the pathologies of the cities following them to the suburbs. On the other hand, unless we start building a lot of housing right away, we're all going to be impoverished because nobody's going to be able to afford to live anywhere.
And really, really, Chris, I mean, affordable housing, with all due respect to the great town of Greenwich, well, affordable housing in Greenwich, well, wait a minute, hold it. How's that going to work? And you know, Chris, they'll only build the affordable housing if these developers can build the units accompanying them that they really can make their money on. People don't understand that.
Yeah, you know, inflation may be the greater problem here, or an equal problem here. We need to build the housing where there are already, infrastructures for it. We need to build the housing where there's not just open property, but, you know, where there's streets and sewer lines and gas lines and electric lines. And building a lot of affordable housing out in Ashford or Eastford where, you know, there isn't that stuff. I mean, that doesn't make sense. I thought the governor did understand this a little bit.
Yeah.
A few months ago. You know, you the inner suburbs have vacant property, and they've mm-hmm. they've got the infrastructure, you know, the facilities. You know, we probably could build, you know, some pretty nice neighborhoods, and not
yeah.
single family home neighborhoods. I'm talking about, you know, Queens, New York, or Brooklyn, New York
mm-hmm.
Neighborhoods, even downtown New Haven neighborhoods, where you've got commerce downstairs and you got residences upstairs.
Yeah.
That's really what keeps downtown New Haven going, and the failure to do that is what destroyed downtown Hartford and moved downtown Hartford to West Hartford. That's the sort of thing we need to do. But if Representative Rojas is saying, don't worry, this bill isn't going to make anybody build any housing at all. Well, if he's telling the truth, then what's to worry about?
Exactly. A couple things here, Chris. Your column that came out yesterday, Wednesday, you talk about education. I know you're very passionate about that. And there's no, speaking of housing in Fairfield County, there's no surprise that some of the elite schools in the state, at least on the high school level, are in Fairfield County.
Yeah, an internet site called Niche, N-I-C-H-E, did a survey of Connecticut schools, and, you know, predictably enough, it found that the 10 best high schools and 10 best middle schools and 10 best elementary schools are nearly all in, you know, rich towns in
mm-hmm.
Fairfield County or close to it, or rich towns like Glastonbury or
yeah.
Avon in the Hartford area. I'm sure teachers are going to seize on this as evidence that, you know, see, if you spend a lot of money on your schools, you get, you know, good results, which I think is completely wrong. The thing that distinguishes the towns with the best schools in the Niche survey is, you know, not just the academic results of the schools, but the demographics of the town,
mm-hmm.
the you know, the higher incomes of the families there, and the particularly the higher parenting. Most of the kids in those towns with the best schools, they've got two parents. Most of the kids in the towns with the worst performing schools, you know, are in the cities.
Sure.
They've got no father in the home. I mean, the problem in this case is not per capita spending, which is what the teacher unions always want us to look at, and what the state education department always wants to look at it, but it's per capita parenting. If the kids have parents, if they have two parents, odds are they're going to, you know, do well in school, and they're going to attend school. If they don't have parents, you know, like in New Haven and Hartford, chronic absenteeism is going to be out of control, and when the kids do get to school, they're just going to cause problems because they don't know how to behave. And this lack of parenting is what the real education issue is, and it's not spending, but we've been treating it as
yeah.
a spending matter for 50 years, and educational results have only collapsed.
Yeah, and Chris, finally, in about the minute we have left, your upcoming column, again, he's becoming a guy that people just love to look at. Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy and his rising profile still with Democrats here.
Yeah, he made a fairly intelligent statement the other day that people think the Democrats are just as corrupt as the Republicans are, and that's not why they're not protesting
yeah.
Trump as much. I agree with him with that, but what I don't think he picked up on is that Murphy himself is one of the reasons why people think the Democrats
well.
Are just as corrupt as the Republicans are. I mean, now he
yeah.
is telling us that, you know, Joe Biden was obviously impaired, but, you know, he wouldn't tell us that during
the
election campaign.
Sharp as
last
attack,
year.
Chris. He's sharp as attack. Yeah.
So, you know, corrupt, yeah, Chris, you know, the party is corrupt and you're part of the problem.
Yeah, ChrisPowellColumn.com. Check it out, ChrisPowellColumn.com. Chris, thank you as always for joining us. We really appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend, Chris. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Paul. You too. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right.